Hello, Growcast listeners. So great to speak with you today. Jordan River here. Oh, so much exciting stuff going on. First of all, the Grow Pass giveaway is going down October 1st. Man, for you guys who haven't seen this, we're giving away $5,000 in grow gear to our Grow Pass members. Five lucky winners are going to win a lot of really cool stuff. The grand prize is amazing. It's like $2,000 for the grow gear. You get a grow tent, you get a grow light, you get soil and nutrients and CBD and a bunch of cool stuff. I'm really thrilled with what's going on. So you can check it out at mygrowpass.com. Might be a good idea to join in October because every time your subscription renews, you get more tickets into the next raffle. So stay tuned. I'm going to be talking more about this. You're going to see some winners on our Instagram page. Really excited about the 5K giveaway going down for the first time. So stoked to change a grower's life. What else we got going on here? Dr. Coco on the show today. Harvest science. This is really cool. This episode started as a dry cure episode. And we just talk about so much different stuff that it got off track immediately, but it's so strong. Love this episode. You're going to learn so much. So I'm really excited for you guys. Before we jump in, though, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Cultilux, everybody. Cultilux Horticultural Lighting. Just go to cultilux.com and promo code GROWCAST10 saves you 10% off on Cultilux lights. And members to mygrowpass.com get 25% off their Cultilux lights, everybody. Cultilux.com. They are the leading supplier in the industry when it comes to CMH lamps and fixtures, guys. You got to check this out. You've heard about CMH. You've heard about the increased and more diverse terpene profiles. It's really quite an interesting spectrum. If you haven't tried it, it's time to try now. With their industry-leading 315-watt, 630-watt, and brand new 1,000-watt double-ended CMH bulbs, Cultilux has the right fixture for your needs. Just go to cultilux.com. GROWCAST10 for 10% off, and you can save 25% on your lights if you become a member at mygrowpass.com. Plus, you might just win one for free. So what else is going on? We got some Wolfman coming up, and then some more Dr. Coco, a VPD episode coming your way. So stoked with what's going on, guys. All right, I'll stop yapping now. Let's get into the episode. You guys are going to love it. Without further ado, thank you all so much for listening. Best of luck in your grow all week and beyond. Enjoy the show, everyone. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please tell a friend, a grower, a smoker about GrowCast. Spread the show around. We love that. And also check out our other shows, including The Homegrown Helpers, Rob Smith's Cannabis Growing Podcast, and my new show, The Coffee Health and Science Podcast. I'm drinking my coffee right now. I'm a little bit ramped up. I almost need to reach for the vape pen to level out here. Because I got to be on my game for today's guest. We have Dr. Coco on the line. How you doing, Dr. Coco?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on, Jordan.
Oh, my pleasure, man. We got some really great feedback on your last episode. I feel like the chemistry was good. The grow knowledge was good. It was all good, man. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for returning.
Absolutely. And it's my pleasure.
So let's talk about Coco for Cannabis right off the bat. Everyone who hasn't been to CocoForCannabis.com, check it out. You will find all sorts of awesome resources there. You probably heard about it on our last podcast. But Dr. Coco, why don't you tell us about the new stuff you're doing, including the challenge and strain reviews and all that stuff?
Yeah, no, we got a couple of cool new features. The one I really want to highlight, like you said, is the strain review forum. I've been designing this since February, and I've had developers working on it since July. And we've built out this really cool sort of strain review forum editor. You can go in, it prompts you about a bunch of different things to write. You can upload pictures, you can select things like tags about the strain. And it's sort of a way to capture your grow. You know, a lot of people do grow journals, but this is sort of like a one-page little grow journal that you can write out. We ask questions about how it was to grow the strain and then how it was to use and all of that, how it flavors, the effects. And we think it's going to be a really cool resource for the cannabis community. You know, people really want to know sort of what the strains are like and not just what they are to grow, but also to what to use or whatever. And a lot of the reviews just sort of cover part of that. So I hope that this is going to be a comprehensive sort of review, a resource for growers when they're thinking about what strains to grow. And if you grew a strain that you really liked, you know, come over. We'd love to have you write a review of it. You know, it's a cool way to sort of share with the community your thoughts about the strains. And, you know, if somebody else has written a review about a strain that you've grown, you can add your own review to that. So we can see the diversity and see different people's experiences with the same strains from the same breeders. So
totally.
We're really excited about it. We just launched the review forum, and yeah, I'm hoping, you know, people come over and start using it.
Well, I can only imagine it'll get more useful. I mean, just because there's so many strains being bred all the time. And that's a question that we get a ton at GrowCast and GrowPass is, which breeder can I trust? Which strain can I trust? I ordered a seed from a, you know, from a really reputable breeder and it hermied. Was that because of this or that? You know, so I think that if you can get it all in one place where, you know, you can go and see people's experiences and was this a low feeder or a high feeder? Or be careful of your the height of your lights because it's really going to shoot up or whatever it is. I think that's really cool to have that easily searchable and accessible in one place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we ask, like, for example, like, describe the stretch. And so there's going to be a whole area where you can sort of read about how much the plant stretches, what it's kind of like. I mean, those kinds of things that are often hard to get that kind of information when you're trying to pair up different strains or when you're trying to think about combining different effects. So, yeah, you'll be able to search if you're looking for, you know, a happy strain, you'll be able to search for that tag. Or if you're looking for a contemplative strain, or if you're looking for a strain that has pinene or any of those things. So we made it really cross-searchable and, you know, just trying to make a resource so it's easier to find strains. And then hopefully, you know, when you read a review and grow the strain, you'll come back and add your review and we'll get sort of more feedback and people will have a better idea about the range of the different sort of phenotypes and just different people's experiences with it. So
that's cool.
I think it's going to be a cool way to share that kind of knowledge. I mean, I really don't think, you know, most of the reviews now are gathered like on the seed websites, the places that are selling the seeds themselves. And you never really know, like, okay, are they filtering these out to make the reviews look like this is a great strain just to sell you things? Or are these people, you know, how are they sort of, what's their motive in it?
Right.
So our motive is just to share information with the cannabis community. We're not trying to pitch any particular strains. We just want to, you know, share the information.
That's cool, man. I love it. And then real quick, what about this grow challenge that's coming up?
Yeah, so our big grow challenge of the year is the New Year's Grow Challenge. It starts on January 1st. We're taking signups for it now. We got a couple of cool opportunities. If you sign up, you may have an opportunity to be a genetic tester and get some seeds for free and grow that along with us.
Oh, that's cool.
But the New Year's Grow Challenge is just a wide open grow challenge. Anybody's welcome to participate. Any kind of plants, any kind of, you know, seeds or clones, autos or photos. So yeah, everybody's invited to come and participate in the New Year's Grow Challenge. And we're just trying to get a bunch of growers together and have a, you know, a fun collaborative time. All of our grow challenges are really meant to be collaborations where people can share, keep journals, talk in our chat room. New growers can come and ask these kinds of questions, you know, that they inevitably have and be growing along with a bunch of experienced growers that can help out in those situations. So any media you might be growing in, any kind of plants, if you want to try to get in on you know, the seed testing deals, then head on over to Coco for Cannabis and sign up for the NYGC. It's cocoforcannabis.com/NYGC or /challenge.
Nice.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. And then, you know, just start thinking about your grow calendar. We're germinating on January 1st, and you still got plenty of time to sort of get things lined up to be able to grow along with us then. So trying to sort of spread the news at this point so everybody can set their calendars.
So cool, man. I'm sure that you just picked up some participants, if you will.
Cool. Well, all the GrowCast, you know, universe out there is absolutely welcome to come on over and grow along with us.
Nice.
We'd love to have you.
I love these collabs, man. There's no reason that us fellow cannabis podcasters and companies and websites can't be friends. I love it.
I totally agree with that. I mean, it's all about, and that's really our driving sort of philosophy at Coco for Cannabis, the spirit of collaboration. That's what sort of motivates our grow challenges. We just want people to get together and help out and sort of share and collaborate with each other.
Totally.
And collaborating with you and it just helps everybody when we can sort of, you know, bring audiences together and share the knowledge,
totally.
Share the fun and the love of this really amazing plant that we're all involved in.
There's enough ears and hours for everybody. So I'm just super stoked about it. But yeah, let's talk about today's topic, man. We wanted to cover drying and curing. I wanted to cover drying and curing, and I said, who should I get on for this? I know that you're pretty passionate when it comes to drying and curing, so I would love to talk to you about the end of harvest and your drying methods and then getting into curing. You down to do that?
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun topic to go through.
Oh yeah, man. Awesome. Well, let's start with the end of harvest and kind of timing your cut. You know, there's an ongoing discussion on GrowCast, if you will. I hear a lot of talk about judging when to cut your plants, and there's a couple different, main standing strategies that I see out there. A very frequent one is to just go by the time that the breeder recommends and to cut on a certain date. Other people like to look at the plant itself, and then maybe most commonly there is this judging the trichomes business. You know, a lot of people like to look at the trichomes and wait for a certain percentage of cloudy to clear, or wait for amber to come, or wait for a lot of amber, whatever it is. And I know different plants age differently. What do you think about timing harvest? What do you think about people who play with their trichome profiles to achieve desired effects? I know some people like to let it go longer for more couch lock, etc. What do you think about all those walls of words that I just threw you?
Yeah, no, there's quite a bit there. And you know, there's actually quite a bit of science there as well. So we can get into some of the science of cannabinoid biosynthesis. Sure. But first of all, to sort of address like the how you know when it's time to harvest, pretty much throw out the breeder timelines. You can use them to, you can use them to try to match plants and stuff like that. You can use them for like a general idea about how long the plant might take. It's important to note that most breeders start counting their flowering period from when the plant produces pistils, not from when it's flipped to 12-12 lighting.
Oh, wow.
And that's because in like normal grow situations, there's no such thing as flipping to 12-12 lighting. I mean, most plants are grown outdoors. So if you're thinking like an outdoor run, right, there's no flip day. So if you're counting the flowering period, the way you recognize the initiation of the flowering period is when the plant morphologically produces flowers. Right. Wow. Exactly. So oftentimes if the breeder says it's 9-week string, right? So if you start counting on flip day instead of on pistils day, then you're already about a week ahead and you're going to be harvesting a week early than their timeline really suggests anyways. And they're growing in really sort of an ideal situation with really high powered lights, usually double-ended 1000 watt HPS. Probably gonna get through a grow faster. They also have an incentive to sort of push it low, right? Push the breeding window or push the timelines low to make the strain more attractive. Use them as just a general guide, but I certainly would not recommend that anybody sets a specific harvest date based on the breeder timeline.
Very insightful advice.
Pistils will start to turn brown and kind of curl in on themselves as the plant matures most of the time. Not all of the time.
Right. That's the thing is when you have so much diversity, you know, the plant expresses itself in so many different ways. It's hard to go by any visual variant or attribute in general.
Yes. No, absolutely is. And there's a really, especially with the pistils, different plants just behave differently to pistils. They'll respond differently to light, to other sort of issues with climate. So, it can be useful, like if you're seeing a bunch of white pistils sticking straight out of your plants, you know it's not ready yet. But once you do start to see the pistil curling and turning, that's when you start paying attention to trichomes. Hmm. So I'm definitely in the camp that the only way to really accurately know when to harvest is to inspect your trichomes.
And that doesn't surprise me, but go on. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of good research that looks at the sort of the chemical transitions that occur during cannabinoid biosynthesis. So there's three major cannabinoids that we're interested in. I mean, there's more than three, but there's three that are really affected by the timeline of harvest and that sort of harvest window. Of course, THC, which is like the gas pedal of cannabis. CBD, which is essentially one of the big moderators. And then there's CBN. CBN is a less desirable cannabinoid. It's mildly psychoactive, but it's reported to sort of not have as pleasant effects, and it can even adversely affect the euphoric response of THC. So what happens is THC is produced. It's one of sort of the preferred cannabinoids for the plant to produce. A lot of that is because of the way these plants have been bred. And so early on, the plant will prioritize THC production. And as THC production slows, the plant will be able to start producing more CBD. And CBD is a desirable cannabinoid. So as the plant matures, like it starts using less of the precursors to make THC, and that allows it to make more CBD. But what also happens there is that THC that's already made starts to break down into CBN.
Oh.
So there's two things. Like, the plant has to split its energy and can and either sort of use its resources to make THC or CBD. And as it starts to reduce its sort of preference or prioritization of THC, that's good because we want it to allow the plant to make some CBD, but you don't want it to let it go too far that the THC starts to break down into CBN. So the idea here is to harvest when THC levels are high, when CBD has had some time to synthesize, but CBN levels are still low. So we do that, and we understand that based on understanding the biosynthesis of the cannabinoids in the trichomes. When your trichomes are translucent, when they're clear, that means that the plant is prioritizing the production of THC. At that point, CBD will be low because the CBD molecules are being sort of taken up and used in the THC biosynthesis. So if you harvest a plant with translucent or clear trichomes, you'll get a racy, a sort of a speedy high that's commonly associated with those early harvests, right?
Right.
Now, when the trichomes turn cloudy, that's an indication that THC synthesis is slowing. And that other cannabinoids are being developed more. So when the trichomes are cloudy is when you're producing more CBD, because those precursors are no longer being used for THC production. And allowing that CBD to develop gives us a more sort of comfortable and balanced psychoactive experience that's preferred by most growers. So then we have amber, and often people just talk about amber, but I'd like to split amber into translucent amber and opaque amber.
Oh, wow.
So translucent amber trichomes, THC is still being produced, but it's also being degraded into CBN. And at that sort of point, different strains will behave differently. Some strains, when they're translucent amber, the THC is degrading faster than it's being produced. In other strains where the translucent amber, the THC is being produced sort of faster than it degrades. But it's still often worth allowing the plant to continue when they're still really translucent amber trichomes.
Wow.
When they become opaque, when the trichomes are sort of that dark, opaque color, that's sure. When THC biosynthesis is really slowed or no longer occurring.
Wow.
THC is degrading into CBN at that point, and it's the oxidization that we see as the amber. And since CBN is not desired, we recommend harvesting sort of as soon as you start to see the amber or the opaque amber trichomes.
Wow.
But for certain strains, when you see this sort of translucent amber trichomes, you can decide to keep pushing that. And that basically will affect the CBD to THC ratio a little bit. If you let it go further, the THC will have converted more potentially, and there'll be a higher ratio of CBD. So there's an art to this. I mean, that's as much of sort of the science as we understand.
Wow.
But that still doesn't tell you exactly when to harvest your plants. It's going to depend on sort of this specific mix of properties and cannabinoids that you're looking for.
Yeah, no kidding. Because, you know, it's really interesting, like you said, THC degrading into CBN, probably not desirable for the psychoactive experience. But my understanding is that CBN has some great medicinal benefits. Yes?
It's really CBD that has more medicinal benefits than CBN. CBN is really not as a desirable cannabinoid.
Wow, in general? Because I, you know, wow.
CBD. Now, there is, but there is that relationship. So a lot of growers think, I mean, I've definitely heard it said that THC degrades into CBD. That's not true. The plant is actually, you can think of THC and CBD as being substitutes in the plant. The plant can almost sort of has to dedicate resources to making one or the other. And while it's prioritizing THC, it's not making a lot of CBD. As THC production slows, it starts to produce more CBD. But that relationship, so there is a relationship between THC and CBD. But it's not one where THC degrades into it. THC degrades into CBN.
Now, CBN. Did I say CBD? I meant to say.
No, no, you did say CBN. Oh, but, okay. But you made the point that it was sort of medicinally powerful, which it really that I think that that's more true about CBD.
Wow.
CBN does do some things. It is a sedative, so it produces sort of the anti-insomnia effect that comes with cannabis. And that's why people that let their plants grow longer generally feel like they have more of the couch lock effect or more of that sort of sedative effect. That's generally being produced by CBN. If you're really looking for a strain that's like that, it's better to get a high CBD strain rather than or get a strain that's sort of known because of its cannabinoid profile as being a sleepy or a sedative strain.
Wow. As opposed to just letting yours go long.
As opposed to letting it go. Yeah, because you're degrading THC, which really is one of the most desirable cannabinoids for us, into CBN. CBN usually makes people a little bit sort of on edge. It's like a less pleasant sedative experience.
Wow. Fascinating stuff.
Than CBD is.
Super eye-opening. Okay. Wow.
So there's some confusion. I mean, and that's why the folk wisdom of this is true, that if you let the plant go longer, it becomes sort of a more sedative experience. But the idea that a lot of growers seem to have is that it's because the CBD levels are increasing, and that's really not what's going on the biochemical level.
Fascinating, man. I love it. I love it. Super eye-opening. I hope that the listener enjoyed that expose.
So I just want to make something clear. The relationship sort of between THC, CBN, and CBD is all a little bit different. So maybe I should approach these sort of one at a time. So the relationship between THC and CBN is that THC degrades into CBN. So initially the plant will be producing lots of THC. And when the trichomes are translucent, the plant is focused on producing THC. Mm-hmm. Once the trichomes become cloudy, it starts, some of that THC is degrading into CBN, but still at a low rate. So the plant is producing more THC than CBN when the trichomes are cloudy. When the trichomes become a translucent amber, they're still producing THC, but it's also degrading into CBN at about the same. There's going to be a point there where it's sort of, you know, at the same rate. So being produced as fast as it's broken down. But it's that point when they're sort of the cloudy and translucent amber that other cannabinoids are being made. So you often want to sort of keep it going there a little bit, even though the THC and the CBN is balanced out, basically.
Mm-hmm. What do genetics have to do with this? Because I know certain strains will have different profiles. How does that play a role?
Different strains will continue to produce THC longer than others. And as long as they're producing THC in a good ratio, as long as they're producing THC faster than it's degrading into CBN, you want to keep it going. CBN isn't sort of a desirable, it's not something that we're looking for, but it's not a problem. Like, as long as the THC levels are still going up, you push that. So some strains can just go further into flowering, further into this sort of phase, and continue to produce different cannabinoids. And it's really at that point where plants that are high CBD or plants that are, you know, bred for other cannabinoid production, that's when they're doing that other cannabinoid production, is when the trichomes are cloudy or translucent amber.
So that's even more of an argument to let your strains go long so they can really express what they, the genetics that they want to express?
Exactly, yeah. And that's why if you harvest them earlier than that, they produce sort of a more racy, speedy effect, because it doesn't have the full cannabinoid profile, which sort of moderates the THC.
Wow, I love it. Super enlightening.
So now the CBD, because I'm worried I was a little unclear earlier. I don't want to make it sound like you can just make the plant produce CBD if it's not going to produce CBD. Ultimately, the capacity of the plant to produce CBD is genetic. And the relationship between THC and CBD are different. THC doesn't degrade into CBD, but rather THC and CBD are made out of the same compounds, the same precursors in the plant. So the plant basically has to choose whether to make THC or to make CBD. And early in that ripening process, the plant prioritizes the production of THC. So when THC production is high, CBD production is going to be low. Now, if a plant is supposed to be a high CBD plant, you have to give it that sort of time to get there. So when the trichomes turn cloudy, that's really when CBD production starts gaining steam. It's because THC production is slowing down. And while the trichomes are translucent amber, CBD production remains strong, even as THC and CBN are sort of balanced out. So if you want to get the full effect of the plant, you should, for most strains, you should start to see some translucent amber. But we definitely, for both of these reasons, we suggest harvesting when you start to see opaque amber trichomes. Opaque amber trichomes are no longer synthesizing cannabinoids, and degradation is sort of occurring faster than production at that point.
Okay, before we jump back in with Dr. Coco, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Gorilla Grow Tents, everybody. Just go to GorillaGrowTent.com. These grow tents are awesome. You can use promo code GROWCAST for free shipping just for listening to this show. And members of MyGrowPass.com get 10% off their tents plus free shipping. And like I said, one lucky member is winning a free grow tent, 4x8 tent. So cool. You know, the makers of Gorilla Grow Tent were frustrated. They were frustrated with the cheap, flimsy grow tents that weren't standing the test of time out there on the market. So they got together, man. They got together with growers, designers, and engineers. And in 2011 in San Francisco, they came together and really revolutionized indoor gardening with the Gorilla Grow Tent, everybody. These are the tallest, thickest, strongest grow tents on the market. They've got thick, durable canvas, steel interlocking poles, easy view windows, industrial strength zippers, double cinching ducting ports. I mean, it makes it incredibly efficient. These tents are safe, smart, strong, tall, odor-proof, stealthy, insulated, and durable, truly transcending the term grow tent. Really cool stuff, everybody. GorillaGrowTent.com. Promo code GROWCAST for free shipping. And join MyGrowPass.com when you're ready to save 10% on your tents and maybe win one for free. All right, everyone, let's get back to the show. Dr. Coco says it's all about the trichomes.
Yeah, and I go when they're translucent amber. I try to start waiting for signs of amber. You know, it's an art, man. I mean, different plants are so weird. Some plants, they'll have on trichomes on one bud that look like way more advanced than trichomes on other buds. So a couple of just tips for how to actually check your trichomes. You need to check trichomes that are on calyxes or bracts, not trichomes that are on sugar leaves. Trichomes that are on sugar leaves will turn faster than the trichomes that are on the flowers themselves. So make sure that you're looking at the calyxes, like the actual buds. I recommend using a microscope about 60, 80, even 120 times. We have a couple of microscopes in our guide, in our product guide. And I recommend not trying to do it when the plant or when the bud is actually on the plant. You can't like hold a microscope accurately up to a living plant that's growing in your tent or whatever. So you want to cut a small sample. You want to take your snips and cut off a part of the bud. And people are like, really, man, I don't want to touch my buds. But yeah, you're taking like a biopsy, just about like, you know, half a Tic Tac size sample, and bring that to your desk or your table or something and look at it under the microscope. I see a lot of growers trying to like, you know, get right up to their plants. And maybe if you're, you know, 18 and you have excellent eyes, you can use a jeweler's loop, but most growers will have a better experience getting a microscope and being able to see it at a higher magnification. Mm-hmm. And that really helps to bring it to a surface like that. So we look at the other things to try to give us these indications, because we don't want to be cutting samples every day. And, you know, looking at them under the trichome or looking under the scope. So you look at the plant, you look at the pistils, you know, take a sample when you think they're almost ready and get an idea. My microscope now takes pictures. It just hooks up to my computer. It was only like $20 too. It's an amazing thing. And it takes pictures, so I can take a picture, and then the next time I take a sample, I can compare that.
Oh, that's sick. Picture.
Yeah. And you kind of get an idea for how fast they're turning. And then you don't have to, you know, sample too frequently and try to just get them when they're at least all cloudy. Some of them are translucent amber, and maybe you start seeing one or two opaque amber trichomes. Mm-hmm. That's when you want to be chopping the plant.
I love it. I might have to insert this part into the harvest episode because it was so fascinating. We'll see what I do with this, but I love it, man. Thank you sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about end of harvest tricks. Again, comes up a lot on the show, and I'm excited to see what you have to say, what kind of science backs it up. You know, these are the things that people do at the last minute before they cut, usually to try to get some extra boost of potency or flavor. Things like a lights out period, cold shock, or starving the plant. What do you feel are the positives and the negatives of using these strategies?
Yeah, well, there are some, you know, the negatives are kind of low, really, when it gets right down to it, because we're about to murder the plant. Right?
Exactly. So, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's like there's a limit to how badly you can mess things up in the last 2 or 3 days. I mean, you have to almost really try to screw things up at that point. So, I mean, there are ways. If you start like foliar applications or something at that point, you could really turn things south on it in a hurry. But I don't see anybody actually recommending that. There's two really common things, and I'd like to talk about them. One is the final flush. And the other one that you mentioned is the dark period before harvest. Mm-hmm. These are things that have sort of fascinated my partner, Dr. Photon, and I think we've had more conversations about these two things. And part of the reason is that there isn't a lot of science to back them up.
It doesn't surprise
me. What some of the science that exists, well, especially about the final flush, I'll talk about that first. Growers seem to think that flushing the plant with plain water or with a flushing agent at the end of the grow is going to lower the concentration of minerals or of the fertilizers in their buds. That seems to be the common sort of assumption. And I can tell you that that's not true. Mm. There's been studies, enough sort of good science to show that it doesn't lower the concentration of nutrients in the buds. And we wouldn't want that to happen, even if it did. The plant's not sort of storing excess nutrient salts in its flowers. I'm not entirely sure where that sort of line of thinking comes, but so the final flush doesn't sort of flush out the chemicals flowers. Or the salts or whatever from the finished product that you're using. Mm-hmm. It might do something else though. So there's certainly tons of anecdotal evidence that the flush improves the quality of the harvest. And it's a fairly ubiquitous practice. It's even used in quite a few commercial grow operations. There's two possible sort of ways that the final flush may be having its benefit that growers notice. One way may simply be that lowering the electrical conductivity of the water is beneficial to the plant, and it may sort of provoke a beneficial response in growth, especially at the end of harvest. Essentially, we're sort of provoking a change in the way that the plant interacts with nutrients and forcing it to shift its allocation between the production of starches and sugars and other things within the plant. And oftentimes that can lead to sort of benefits in other things. So, and in fact, there is evidence that lowering EC at the end of harvest is, or as you approach harvest, is beneficial to the final product. And so if most nutrient feed charts recommend the final week of nutrients at a lower dosage, at a lower EC or PPM for that reason. It's not because the plant is sort of using less nutrients necessarily. It's because the change in the electrical conductivity of the water affects the way that the plant is sort of interacting with the water and nutrients.
That is super fascinating. I've never thought of that before. And I'd imagine, you know, speaking to you last time, I'd imagine that not all nutrients are created equally. And if you're using the type of, let's say, big name line that wants you to use a lot, and then you don't flush, you could be seeing additional problems that may be coming from sources that we're not even really clear about.
So, yeah, well, the risk there, I mean, if you really are over-fertilizing your plants, that creates other kinds of issues with how the plants will be developing and how the flowers will develop.
Right. And then like maybe, that. And then maybe the lack of flush is what's being pinned on that when in reality,
right.
So I think it's pretty complex.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It could be a lot of other things. There's so many things right at the end of harvest that can affect quality too. And it's so hard to set up really good controlled experiments for this. So there hasn't been good science done on sort of what could be the benefit of this. We just know that it's not sort of lowering the concentration of nutrient salts that are left in the final product.
Wow, that is fascinating.
The other way that this could help, and this is sort of related but different, is it could just be a shock to the plant. And shocking the plant could provoke sort of shock response. And the shock response often in plants is to go into sort of defense mode and produce cannabinoids, produce their trichomes.
Yeah, their weapons are our tasty desserts. So when they pull out weapons, they're pulling out terpenes.
Yep. So there are other kinds of things that we can do. There's been interesting research recently on like dry stressing plants at particular times during flowering to increase terpene and cannabinoid production. Mm. So we may be witnessing something along those lines where this kind of shock to the plant produces that response that is beneficial to us or that we like. But with those kinds of things in mind, a lot of the specific practices of the final flush can certainly be reconsidered. Some growers like try to flush until the plant starts turning yellow and stuff like that, and there's no indication that that's helpful. That's sort of done off of the philosophy that we're trying to leach minerals out of the plant, but that's not what we're trying to do. Hmm. And it's likely that if you're flushing for too long, you're starving the plant and you're harming your sort of final results. So I think there's enough sort of anecdotal evidence that there may be a benefit for doing these kinds of things in the final week. But if you're in the final like 2-3 weeks doing things like this, you're starving your plant and you're probably harming your total harvests. Mm. So that's something to sort of consider. I think some growers may start to flush way too early, especially if you're in a media like cocoa. Cocoa flushes so fast. And DWC flushes so fast. It does take a little bit longer in soil, but
that makes sense.
Yeah, so I only usually flush, like, my plants will get nutrients up to 4 days before harvest, and I'll flush quickly 4 or 5 days before harvest. I'll flush really quickly. I drop the floor out of the electrical conductivity, and the plants sit at, like, you know, 5 or 50 ppm or about 100 or 200 EC, 0.1 or 0.2. for a couple of days. And I'm doing that basically to shock the plants, to expose them to that low electrical conductivity water. And then I'll harvest the plant just after a pretty short exposure to that. I actually don't really want the plant to start cannibalizing itself too much. So I don't really want to see a ton of fade in the leaves.
Man, I'm fascinated by it. And I wonder how much of all of this just comes from the shock. Like you're saying, if it is in fact shock that can create these genetic responses that are desirable to us, which by the way makes perfect sense. It's the same thing with humans, right? If you look at humans, that's how we get stronger. All of the greatest, yeah,
exactly.
Seriously,
circuit training is a form of shocking your body, right?
100%, man, and not just that, but it goes with entire species of people too. Like the Mongols were hard because of the place they lived. They lived in the Russian steppe. That's why they were so formidable, right? Because they were constantly stressed. The Germans, they had no natural borders. Only a people who could fight off all sides could possibly live there. Only a people that was so hardened from the stress that they created a freaking dead zone. Stay away from these badass Germans. Point is, it's the hardship and the shock and the stress that creates this strength, like real strength. And in this case, that strength is usually in strength of potency and aroma and stuff like that.
Yep. And I think that, you know, there's risky ways to stress the plant. I mean, there's, and I almost don't like talking about the dry stressing during flower. Like there's a pretty good science about how to do dry stressing in the middle of the flowering period.
I'm skeptical of that too. I'm sure.
Yeah. And I don't talk about it too much because I think, man, it's going to be really hard and you're far more likely to screw things up, especially for a beginner grower. And I know that beginner growers will be like, I want to try it and get out there and like try to start dry stressing their plants. But so if you're doing it like in the middle of flowering and trying to stress the plant out, that's risky. I mean, those kinds of stresses can come back to bite you. But again, like we said at the top, you know, when you're in the last week, there's not so much you're going to do at that point that's really going to adversely affect the plant. So at that point, if you want to try to stress it out a little bit by flushing it, it certainly seems, again, like the anecdotal evidence on this is almost 100% that people feel that the final flush improves the quality of the bud. And I don't think that we can sort of completely overlook all of that anecdotal evidence. We just need to figure out why, because it's not why people think it is.
Right. Man, I love it. Always so interesting to talk to you about this stuff. I want to follow up on something that you kind of mentioned last time. You were talking about how you were a proponent of wet trimming when we last spoke. So can you just kind of talk about the overall philosophy on trimming, drying, and curing?
Yeah, well, I want to talk briefly about the darkness before harvest one.
Oh, sure.
Too.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry if you want to wrap that up.
Yeah, it's this other thing. I know we get caught up in that.
I thought that you covered it, but no, please. Yeah, let's.
So darkness before harvest is another really interesting pre-harvest sort of trick that growers go through. And I support the darkness before harvest philosophy as well. And I'll tell you, we can take this one sort of two ways. First of all, if you're trying to decide when to harvest your plant, always harvest your plant at the end of a dark cycle. The cannabinoid production is constant in plants throughout the daily cycle. And cannabinoids are actually degraded when they're under light. So they basically burn off. I mean, that's why we protect them. We'll talk a little bit about this more when we get into curing. So when your plants are exposed to their, you know, their bright horticultural lighting, they are both producing cannabinoids and cannabinoids are burning off. When you turn off the lights, they continue to produce the cannabinoids and the cannabinoids aren't burning off. So the peak sort of
the high population hour. Yeah.
Now, this is true with a lot of C3 crops like cannabis. It's true that they continue to do their biological processes at night, their synthesis processes like that. And they're sort of not degrading in the same way. So For example, a lot of crops are harvested right before the daytime. Grapes, for example, wine grapes, especially for good quality wine, they will get out there at 4 o'clock in the morning and have all the workers in the vineyards with helmet lights and going around and harvesting those grapes in the pre-dawn hours. And if the vintners were able to extend the darkness, they would. Right. But they're growing outside in vineyards and the sun's going to come out. So they've got to harvest right there at the end of the dark period. So we have the advantage over a lot of growers. There's actually there's one more study on this was with spinach. And spinach shows an incredible range in nutrient concentrations, depending on when it's harvested during the daylight cycle.
Oh.
So spinach that's harvested in pre-dawn has a much higher concentration of like the minerals and vitamins and all that stuff that we want than spinach that's harvested in the afternoon. C4 crops are different. So C4 crops like corn, for example, produces, I'm getting all to say, but corn, for example, produces, they interact with carbon dioxide differently and they have a different synthesis schedule. So they show peak sort of peak potency in the height of the sun. So corn is often harvested in, especially when you care about it. The thing is that for a lot of these field crops, they don't care. But if you want to harvest corn at its sort of peak potency, it'll be in like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow. To get the max corn. Yeah, that's fascinating.
To get the max sort of potency of those whatever
corniness.
It is in corn that you're looking for.
It's cornosity.
Yeah, it's cornosity.
Corn to the core.
The different flavor compounds.
So, and that just has to do with how they fixate carbon and like you said, their photosynthesis cycles.
It's how the whole photosynthesis cycle works. So it's a difference in when they're able to absorb carbon or carbon dioxide and how that limits sort of C3 plants production during the light cycle.
Wow, that's so fascinating, because if that's the case, then it makes sense why the extended lights out period would work out for cannabis.
So it definitely if you can choose between sort of harvesting at the end of a lights on period or at the end of a lights off period, then you should choose to harvest at the end of a lights off.
Now, quick question, do you know if Spectrum has anything to do with that?
But in other ways and sort of earlier. So Spectrum affects the production of cannabinoids and sort of being exposed to certain spectrums.
But this every light burns
exciting
it off.
Research in UVB light and things like that. That being exposed to those certain spectrums produces that same kind of response in the plant.
Okay.
And it's like, oh crap, I need to make more cannabinoids to protect myself from this thing.
Okay.
But sort of not in just the harvest timing decisions.
Okay. Damn, that's cool though.
Yeah. So with the harvest time, extending the darkness, I think is good. I don't think you're going to get sort of a tremendous benefit out of extending it for a very long period of time. So I usually go 36 hours in the dark before I harvest.
Ooh, I like that.
48's fine. Sometimes it sort of fits in your schedule more. I like to give them at least 24 and like less than 48. If you let them go a lot longer than that, then things can start to get weird.
They start to see
really sort of stressing out the plant in weird ways, and it's going to start reallocating resources, and it's going to cannibalize itself for energy, and it's going to start doing things that we don't like. So it's important to know, and sort of part of that, the science behind that, plants have to survive darkness. Plants like cannabis don't depend on darkness really for their biological functions as much as they are adapted to survive it. So they know how long the dark period is going to be. And they store enough sort of energy to be able to power themselves through their production, the synthesis side, during that dark period. And studies have shown that plants at the end of the dark period that they're expecting have used 90 to 95% of their stored energy. that they stored for that dark period.
Jeez.
So the plant knows, like, right? And it's using, it's allocating its resources to survive that dark period. That's one of the reasons that when we extend the darkness, when we're still in the middle of life, like when I go from 12 or from 18.6 to 12.12, I do it in steps. I don't suddenly go from 18.6 to 12.12. I go to 16.8, 14.10.
And that was going to be my 12. Next question was if you stagger your light cycles, it sounds like you're pretty big.
Yeah,
proponent of
I mean,
not
I'm all about
them.
Keeping things sort of smooth and comfortable for the plant during those stages. I like to do things gradually and keep things as consistent as possible. And since the plant was expecting only 8 hours of darkness, suddenly, or 6 hours of darkness, suddenly giving it twice that much darkness is a pretty big stress on the plant, you know, when you flip it to flowering. But again, at the end of the cycle, this is like right before you murder the plant. So if people think like, oh, the plant's just going to keep on going and producing things forever, I mean, it's running out of energy. And after it sort of exhausts that energy that it left, it's going to be able to survive for a while. But if you let it go for more than a couple of days, it's really going to start to do things that were probably undesirable at that point. Mm-hmm. We need more research on this. And this is an area that I think there is research done on, but most of it's held in, as proprietary information. I think some of the large sort of corporate cannabis companies know much more about these answers than is publicly available.
That's fascinating. Can't wait till that leaks out. I like that, though.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where we're sort of getting inferences on some of these things. But you're right, it's sort of leaking out proprietary knowledge at this point because the publicly funded research hasn't gotten into this.
So fascinating, man. I like the nickname Dr. MJ, We Need More Research, Coco.
There we go. Yeah, we definitely need more research. We definitely need more. But it's an exciting time for that because, you know, we're getting it. And this is like, you know, to be a scientist in this field is just fascinating because it's not every day that we can sort of have these kind of breakthroughs and this new exciting research. And we have so many research questions just begging for field trials, right? And getting all that data back is fascinating. A lot of other fields are much more mature than this. And it's like, you have to go to like your 101 class and just learn all the information that they already know. Like we're getting to discover it. So it's fun.
That's cool. Did you have anything to wrap up when it came to end of harvest shock or anything like that?
No, those are the two things that I sort of recommend. There are these other sort of treatments that people like to play around with. I don't think there's a lot of science to back many of them up other than potentially through the pathways that we've discussed. Changing the way the plant interacts with the water can affect the way the plant grows and sort of synthesizes, and shocking the plant can potentially benefit the plant. It can also potentially harm the plant though. So, but those are sort of the two potential pathways. And if you want to experiment with these things, you know, in the 48 hours before you kill the plant anyways, then I don't have a problem. I sort of enjoy the spirit of experimentation.
Man, that's really cool. Super eye-opening on subjects that come up a lot, but that's deeper than we've ever gone. So fantastic.
Cool.
Listen,
excellent.
We're coming up on an hour here though. Do you want to do maybe, you want to do maybe 10 minutes on trimming and then we can always touch base for a part two?
Yeah, right. We were supposed to do this on drying and curing and we're still back in
the harvest. The harvest. Oh, shit. I love it. Oh my God. Okay. Well, listen, I'll rework
it. Back in the harvest.
I'll make it happen. That, we got plenty of time. This will be a two-parter.
Yeah.
This is great.
That's great.
So,
I mean, I don't know. Do you want me to maybe go?
I do. No, you know what I want you to do?
You want to,
I want you to tease the upcoming trimming episode and by doing that, talk about your philosophy of trimming and specifically wet trimming.
Yeah. Okay. So a few things here. Once you've decided it's time to harvest, right? Because that's sort of the big thing. And again, the final thing about when it's time to harvest is if in doubt, wait. Now you've harvested, you've got your plants and you kind of got to know what to do with them. Growers sometimes even ask like sort of, how do I harvest my plant? You can do whatever you want. You can cut it down by branch. You can cut the whole plant off at the stock.
I'm surprised you're saying that. There's no major difference in your opinion when it comes to whole plants.
You know, I like to actually harvest the plant quickly in the darkness if possible, but it depends on the size of the plant. I mean, so we're sort of dealing with logistical issues also. So at the end of that dark period, ideally I would like to harvest the whole plant before it sees light and before it starts sort of doing its waking up processes and converting sugars and starches. But that's not always possible to like go in and harvest your plants in the dark. So oftentimes when I have a big main line, you know, with eight sort of big branch colas, I go in, I try to keep it dark in the tent and I'll cut off a cola, I'll take it out, I'll sort of process that, get it hanging up untrimmed, and then go in and cut the next cola and process that. It also helps if you have a partner to help you do that harvesting process. You can sort of chop, one person chops and passes it off to somebody. But my wife's not always available for that. She's a trooper when she is. You want to get the plant chopped pretty quickly. I'm not a huge opponent of doing a partial harvest either. If you have a plant that basically, if you have a plant that the tops are done before your other plants are, and you don't think that the lower buds are done, you can harvest off the top of the colas, let the lower plants and buds on that plant continue to go with the rest of the plants. And you know, growers often ask about like, well, how does the flush or how does nutrients? And my attitude is basically, it doesn't really matter at that point anymore. I mean, you kind of got to play it by what the plant needs. You can, if you do a partial harvest like that, you cut off the top colas of a plant, you can put the rest of that plant back on nutrients if you want to like let it go longer if it's been flushing. There's no issue there, and you can try to flush it again if you want to. I'm not really sure any of that's going to have a big impact at that point. You're really just trying to get those flowers a little bit more mature. I would only do that though if you have other plants that are still going to go. Like if you're already running the lights for other reasons, because you're not going to get much additional benefit out of sort of letting those lower buds go longer. They will get better and they will mature more, but not enough to justify the lights unless the lights are already going to be on.
Love it.
Once you get the plant chopped and hanging, and I hang it upside down primarily because of convenience, as much as anything else. And then I'll take it that night or whenever that is that day, and I start processing the plant. On each branch, I trim off every side branch that has its own little stem. Anything that can be grabbed with its own clothespin essentially gets cut off the plant, because it's a whole lot easier to trim if you have them, you know, as separate
bucked down, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. You got to break the plant down first and then start trimming it up. And I trim it all wet. I try to trim it close and wet. And really, because one of the flavor ruining properties in cannabis is chlorophyll. And most of the time that you're feeling like that sort of harshness or a bitter taste when you're smoking cannabis, it's a result of uncured chlorophyll or too much leaf matter basically in the bud. So I try to get really reduce that by just physically eliminating it. That makes a smoother cure and I'm sort of a better cure in the end than doing a dry trim. I try to trim it all up. I hang it then and I'm going to try to go quicker. I just keep getting into too much detail, Jordan.
No, it's good. This is perfect. It's eye opening.
I hang it up then. And, you know, there's some things that you want to think about when you're doing that initial dry. Your goals and concerns are maximizing cannabinoid and terpene sort of preservation. So you're trying to minimize their volatility, but you're also trying to prevent mold. So your two basic management concerns are how do I dry this cannabis that maximizes the retention of cannabinoids and terpenes and does not produce mold?
So you're basically saying hot and dry enough to dry the plant, but not so hot and dry as that it just damages the trichomes and such.
Yeah, exactly. So you manage four sort of parameters when you're drying. You have to manage temperature, relative humidity, and temperatures for terpene volatility. So you want to keep the temperature below 68 if possible. Below 70 is fine. Once you get up into the mid-70s, some terpenes are volatile in the mid-70s and you're going to lose them. So if you can smell your cannabis when it's drying, that means you're losing terpenes.
Wow.
Right? They're volatilizing and that's how you're smelling them.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And you got to think, like, if they were in a refrigerator, I wouldn't be able to smell them.
Good point.
Right. Because,
yeah.
And that's because they're not volatizing in the refrigerator. So if you're smelling your cannabis, it's probably too warm. You want to lower the temperature. You need to control relative humidity, basically just for the risk of mold. But you don't want it to be so dry that they dry out too fast, because that affects terpene volatility and cannabinoid volatility.
Mm-hmm.
So temperature, relative humidity, airflow. You want the air moving but not blowing. And again, the risk there is mold. Mm-hmm. And then darkness. A little light's not problematic, but you don't want drying buds sort of under horticultural lights for sure, under bright sun or any of that. And again, that's terpene volatility and cannabinoid volatility. So
right.
you're sort of managing cannabinoid and terpene volatility with concerns about mold. And during the dry, those are your four parameters: temperature, relative humidity, airflow, and darkness. Yeah, and then getting into the cure is just sort of an extended process of that. We could, sort of, if you want to spin this off, we can do
a whole other episode. I want to do a whole nother episode, I think, because I got a lot of questions, man. I want to tease it. You know, I spoke to someone in Jamaica who says that they dry their cannabis outdoors in the sun, and that the tourists want the green shit and they keep the brown shit for themselves. So I'm going to tease it, and we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff, and if that's bull honky,
yeah, so,
or if there could
And there's a lot of anecdotal stories about that too. The other thing you have to realize is when cannabis is grown as a field crop, it's a totally different set of management situations than when it's grown in tents, like in a 4x4 tent. When you're growing, people like to say that about like the hashish production in Morocco and stuff. They're like, they just lay it out in the sun. It's like, yeah, because they're growing hectares of it. I mean, what else do you want them to do? There's not an option there. They can't hang it up in their cloak closet because it's like, you know, 5 hectares of cannabis that they're drying.
But could the you know, generally deemed detrimental process actually be creating some complex, because I know that cannabinoids can change during, you know,
yes,
different processes. Could it possibly be creating some perfect combination that's like a secret super Jamaican superweed?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It will change the cannabinoid profile. I can say that. It's sort of tough to do it in a consistently reliable way, and a lot of it depends on what you're starting with. But yeah, will.
Think about
it. Leaving your buds out in the sun will absolutely affect the cannabinoid.
Yeah,
profile.
I'd imagine so. I'd never do it. But I thought that was interesting, and I want to ask you about curing and, you know, how to tell when your bud is dry and all sorts of stuff. So I want to go deep into it, man. We ran out of time here because you're a great guest, man. So thank you so much again.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure to come on. I thought it was a fun set of topics to get into,
and
I enjoyed the conversation. So it'll be fun to go deeper and sort of, you know, get back into trimming a little bit and get into that the dry and really what I'm looking for, thinking about like, when do you actually stop drying? How do you know when it's time to go into jars? And then thinking about sort of how to manage the jars most effectively. So I would love to come
absolutely
back on, talk about all of those things.
How long to burp and maybe alternative to jars, why you wouldn't want to use this or that. Let's do it, man. So before we sign off though, let's give out all your stuff. CocoForCannabis.com, obviously. What else do you want to promote? Your Instagram?
Yeah, no. So CocoForCannabis.com. We are, you know, dedicated to the science and practice of growing cannabis. We have a chat room. We have a growers forum. Like I talked about at the top of the episode, we have the brand new strain review forum, which we're inviting everybody to come and load their reviews of their favorite strains or their unfavorite strains. I mean, use this as an opportunity to beg people off of these strains
too.
Good point. I mean, I'm going to write a review of a strain that Hermied on me and tell people, like, look, the strain Hermied. So if you grow it, you know, that's a big risk. And I think that sharing that information peer to peer is just going to be hopefully, you know, a really valuable resource for everybody. So we're really excited about that. And, you know, come and grow with us on January 1st, everybody. It doesn't matter what kind of seeds you got or what kind of clones you got or how much experience you got or what kind of background you got. If you've never grown before, this is the best time to try, because you'll be growing with a whole group of growers that are just interested in sort of supporting each other and sharing the experience and talking to each other about the plants. And you'll have a live chat room every day. You can pop in there and ask whatever kind of questions 24 hours a day, and somebody will write back with an answer.
So,
if you're interested, if you're interested in growing together with us, come on over to CocoaForCannabis.com.
Oh, I love it. I'm sure you'll see an uptick. Everybody go get it. And while you're on your device, whatever that device is, hit us up on Instagram at Growcast is the show, at Jordan River IG if you want to talk to me directly. The Coffee Health and Science Podcast. Come on, guys. Come give a rating and review. The show's just launching. It really helps me out. And it's a great show, too. I had a Harvard Dean of Ongoing Education, Dr. Sanjeev Chopra, on. Holy crap, that guy's awesome. And he's going to talk to you about coffee and why it makes you live like 12% longer if you drink it.
Wow.
Man,
I'm going to add it to my playlist.
Oh, please do. That would be great. Everyone out there, absolutely. Thank you all so much. This is Dr. MJ Coco and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter. And a quick special shout out to Jay Blanked for doing the background music for the ads. Go to jblanked.com to find more of his music, and find him on soundcloud.com/jblanked.